have so much empathy and such a connection with the people that you spend all this time.
And welcome to Open Source's Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, and I will definitely try this week to refrain from being crude, false, and unpresidential. That's my goal. I solemnly swear.
Solid goal.
Solid goal.
Easier said than done, though.
Solid gold.
And this is, we should point out, day five of the post-Mansbridge era.
Oh, yeah. How are you feeling about that?
I'm all right. It's
me
fine.
Too. Yeah, it's like, I don't know.
To barely notice.
They called Rosie up there. I don't know. It's she can't help herself but comment and tell jokes. Kind of like we do.
Yeah. She gets paid more than we do, though.
Yes.
Open Source is the CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Source's podcast from Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today we talk about the Proud Boys and why we're not proud to know them. Part of the rising tide of alt-right groups here in Canada, the group disrupted a protest of First Nations people in Halifax, and oops, five or six of them are active service members with the Canadian Navy. And then we will welcome back Green Party of Ontario leader Mike Schreiner to talk about the latest in municipal and provincial affairs. Schreiner is busy preparing for his own run in Guelph and his party's provincial-wide run next spring, but he is not too busy to promote Venerfs, and we will ask him about that later in the bottom of the hour. But before we get into the first topic, we do have a special announcement.
Yes, it's the Hillside Ticket Giveaway. We have two pairs of day passes, so four tickets total to give away for Saturday, July 15th. Be the first or second person to call in at 519-837-2378, 519-837-2378, and one of the pairs will be yours. Your name will be added to the guest list, and you'll be able to collect your passes on site. For those of you that know Hillside, it's that big tent when you park. Give us a shout. Operator is standing by, 519-837-2378, and you can go to Hillside and somebody else for absolutely nothing on Saturday, July 15th. Rock and roll.
And folk and bluegrass.
And classics. And a little bit of rock, a little bit of roll.
Yes. But for our first topic, speaking of reasons to be green with envy, the NDP Green Coalition has officially begun in British Columbia, and that is after an extended effort to hold on to power by Christy Clark's government. The Liberals fell in BC just before Election Day, or just before Canada Day, I should say. And now a new political day has dawned, and I think it's been rather inevitable since the start after the May election, Scotty.
Yeah, but an interesting lead up to it, and I think everybody saw it coming. The Liberals lost the confidence vote, I think 44 to 42. I think they lost two votes in a row to that spread. So it was just a matter of time before the government would fall, and it did. So Christy Clark, of course, had to go to the
lieutenant governor
and say, well, what should we do? I think she's supposed to advise the LG, but she didn't. Mm-hmm. Instead, she pulled this move where she requested an election, which was a little bit kind of...
Yeah.
After doing all that posing and posturing, it's like, well, I really think you should call another election. And the LG said, nope, because we have the NDP Green supply and confidence arrangement waiting in the wings to take over. And it's totally kosher within our system. Absolutely no problem. So she saw Premier and Premier Horgan, backed by Andrew Weaver. And as we said before, it's not really I've heard people referring to it as a coalition. It's not a coalition. It's a different thing. Very similar to a coalition, though. Greens will have a say. And so that's going to happen. So is it the next couple weeks? It's soon, isn't it?
July 18th is when they'll be sworn in.
But there won't be a sitting, will there? They'll be sworn in and they'll just be the government over the summer. Is that right?
From what I understand, they are going to be spending the summer sort of getting a handle on things and going over transition documents and things. And then they'll have their first legislative sitting in September.
So it's there you go, and that's note the popping sound means it's all good. So
that's right.
And it's going to be interesting, obviously, because what is bound to happen, and God help them if they have a flu outbreak or something, as to whether somebody's sitting. Everybody's pretty much going to have to turn up for every sitting, or the potential is there that the government could fall. How long will it last? I don't know. There's been predictions. There's a certain amount of precarity going along with this. Something else that may happen, too, is that the speaker was... the speaker will possibly have to vote with the government. This doesn't normally happen, where sort of run-of-the-mill things and tasks for them to pass, the speaker will have to vote for them. Normally, the speaker is generally a tiebreaker. I've got that right? The speaker, in the event of a tie, will decide. But it sounds like to maintain this to any degree, the speaker is going to have to vote with the government itself, which is going to be interesting because that is breaking with tradition for sure.
Well, I mean, they would have to because if the speaker is an NDP member and or a Green member, that means it's 43-43. So if it's a confidence motion, as you say, and the Liberals decide to take the no vote, then yeah, the speaker will have to break a tie. And, although it should be noted, Christy Clark has said, I think her exact quote is, if they do it right, there's no reason that the Liberals can't work with the NDP and the Greens to pass things in the legislature. And that's something else we'll have to see how long that lasts.
Yeah, as long as it's not a confidence motion, right? They can do any arrangement or that they like. I mean, they could have unanimous votes as well. There's a possibility there.
It's been known to happen.
So Christy Clark's future, she's probably... finished. She's going to be in opposition, but it's been suggested that she's going to move on at this point, right? Or is she? Do you reckon she's just going to try and cling to the leadership of the Liberals?
She might. I mean, it's
depends what's in the cards, but
we're talking about a precarious position too, where if we get sort of into governing business, and maybe the Green, a couple of the Green MLAs. Have start having second thoughts and maybe want to start stretching themselves beyond. Because when we talked about this deal before, we did talk about there are on a number of fronts, the Greens are basically going to hold their nose and support the government on a couple of different issues. And if it becomes a matter of holding their nose isn't allowing them to follow their principle, then it would not be terribly surprising if the government fell. And then you don't want to be in the middle of a leadership campaign in this kind of position. And I think typically when we've seen minority government situations in the past, there isn't a huge immediate leadership shakeup. And we certainly saw that in Ontario during the last minority government here. Tim Hudak stuck around until the 2014 election, even though there were rumblings that some people wanted him gone before another election.
Mm-hmm. So that's it. And she may potentially, another dealing of the cards could be premier again.
Sure.
Realistically, if the government does fall and they have an election in whatever period, because, this kind of setup is fairly unstable, especially with the narrowness of the margin. I mean, it was a statistical tie, but it was 40% for both the Liberals and the NDP within a few percentage points, or tenths of a percentage point, I think it was. So it's like, it's pretty much a tie. But as we see in this system, the number of seats versus the percentage of the vote doesn't make a difference. Now, if we see the new government, the NDP Green government, putting through the legislation that they seem to want to in terms of proportional representation, that could be the game changer. Now, as to what the Liberals will do to try and... they don't seem too big on it, at least at the federal level as well. I'm sure the provincial ones don't either, as to whether they will be able to... will it sail through? Will they have discussions on it? Could it bring the government down? Anything like that. Because I would think something like PR would be a confidence motion, right? It would have to be.
Probably.
So... like I said before, everybody will have to be there.
Well,
so.
if they end up deciding on straight up PR, it would probably mean adding seats to the legislature, which would be a financial obligation, which would definitely make it a confidence motion.
Mm-hmm.
if they wanted to do something like what was proposed here with the local proportional representation, where you keep the same number of seats, but you create a regional thing where you can vote proportionally if you like, then maybe not so much. But yeah, if it's to be straight up pure proportional, then it's going to come with a dollar amount in terms of having to add people to the legislature.
Mm-hmm. I should mention, too, that I saw a bit of an interesting sidebar to do with this.
Sidebar?
Sidebar.
Sidebar, Your Honor?
To do with this story, in that I didn't know this, but the BC Liberal campaign manager was Laura Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And if that name rings a bell, she's quit. She's quit her job. If that name rings a bell, you might remember her. She is one of the ones up on breach of trust and mischief charges here in Ontario regarding the gas plant cancellation under McGuinty, which we talked about extensively, I think, on this show and on the other show as well. So it sounds like that, that's going to come back into the news soon enough. I believe it's September that's going to happen. So coming back to Ontario, the ghost of the gas plant billion-dollar boondoggle has been called lots of times. Will surface again. So
not great timing going
making
into
lots of hay for the upcoming election.
Yeah, especially since
I'm saying upcoming. It's a year from now, but
well, it'll be over a year from now. But yes. you're not wrong. It's not that's not great timing for the Liberals, especially since there was a poll released yesterday or the day before that they are neck and neck with the PCs now. So. Mm. They probably don't want to be reminding people about stuff that happened. But to get back to BC, I would not count out Kristy Clark at all. Kelly McParland in the Post called her the Terminator of politics. Like, she'll be back. The question is, will that, will time make people forget? I mean, because we touched on this a couple of minutes ago. Everything leading up to the fall of the government was so, it was just dripping in politics. It was just, first of all, she sort of refused to accept this, the formation of the government to begin with, and she proceeded to try and form a government on her own, even though she had to know it was going to fail. Like, who in the face of the Greens and the NDP getting power, who was going to cross the line? It was never going to happen. And then the throne speech, it was like they ripped off the Green Party and the NDP party's platforms from the election. Like, we're going to be giving you welfare reform, and we're going to be having stabilization payments for disabilities, or it's going to match inflation, and we're going to ban union and corporate donations to the party. And it's like
pretty cynical stuff.
It was a complete 180 degree turn.
I heard it referred to as the massive pendulum swing, which is so true. And I think it was something like they came up with a billion.
Yeah.
The magic billion, like Theresa May's magic billion
oh, no,
for childcare.
We had
child
a billion
care.
Here. We didn't tell you guys. We got a billion.
That's been for years, and they went back, of course, in time and found the quotes. It's like, oh, no, we don't have anything. There's no money for that. We can't do that for years and years and years.
Exactly.
And then it's like, hey, you know what? We want this gig, so we're just going to start throwing cash around, which is, it's...
We opened a closet and found all this money.
It was gold bars we forgot about from the war or something, so who knows? But, it was like, hearing what went on with that, and everybody's like, whatever.
Yeah.
We'll let you say your little speech, then we're going to bring you down. So, I don't know if that cynicism or whatever will carry on. People will say, she was throwing everything at it. But the governments in this country were at about the time. It's 15, 16, 17 years. Mm-hmm. Then they get chucked out. And what is it? We're briefly going back to Ontario, same kind of thing, right? We've had the Liberals since
2003.
So it's feeling like the same period of time. So the governments in this country generally have an expiry date. And I think the Liberals in BC have hit it.
Yeah. But, it's not particularly her fault, but then... It's sort of a sad situation, right? I'm not particularly sure if it's her or if it's just like the general sort of prevalent male attitudes about women in power too, because there was somebody shared on social media, they were like sitting behind her in like an airport lounge and just like, oh, she's here like ranting and raving about all these people and we're not supporting her in the Vancouver elites and all this. And it's like, oh, okay. We all kind of want to think the worst of somebody who's, you know, been kind of clearly power hungry. But at the same time, you know, can you trust like an anecdotal person who's just posting stuff on social media?
So,
no. Yeah, exactly. It's a bit bizarre. It'll be interesting to see how this does turn out. And I'm sure our guest upcoming will have some thoughts about
where
this might be going, and how this might affect the Ontario run, because the situations are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
A government that's kind of long in the tooth, a female premier who's been kind of a divisive figure all along. It's, you know, the government that's been very divisive all along, a government that has, you know, in the last couple of months been sort of scrambling to try and secure its bona fides to, you know, make a case for itself to keep going for another 4 years. You know, we've seen that with guaranteed income and minimum wage increases. So, you know, I think Kathleen Wynne is very good at reading the tea leaves, and I think she does see the writing on the wall, and she's trying to do everything she can to scrub it off. And the big question here is whether or not it'll work. But we will get into that with our guest after the musical interlude.
For sure. I just want to mention, we do have a winner for one pair of tickets. Scott
Excellent.
McGovern is going to Hillside on Saturday, July 15th. So you can see Scott there. If you get the other set of tickets, there's still one set available, 519-837-2378, 519-837-2378. The operator is still standing by. One more set of tickets to Hillside on July 15th, which is Saturday.
I laugh because he's an employee of EdVideo, and I'm the president of the board of EdVideo.
There's a conflict of interest Scott, give those tickets back. No, it's okay.
In the interest of full disclosure, because we're community radio, and, you know, Guelph in many ways is a small community. And
Scott, thanks for listening.
Scott's a fan of the show because he does bring up when I see him. So just full disclosure, I don't want some of these trolls who were paying us a visit today going on about it's a rigged scheme, and it's like open sources is fake media, crooked media.
Who's calling next? Your mom, and she's going to take you. Right?
Oh, maybe. Is that,
okay.
It's possible.
Mrs. Donaldson, can you call? We're waiting. We have call display. We'll know what's like.
Oh, man.
Adam, his mom on the line.
Oh, don't go there.
519-837-2378. Random person we do not know. Please call and get your tickets. Hillside, free, gratis. It's a screaming good deal. I should have been in advertising. Hey, what a deal. Screaming good deal.
Speaking of opposites, we wanted to talk about this. We were going to talk about other loudmouths who may be traveling abroad this week. But,
oh, yeah.
But this seemed to be kind of
topical, really.
Yeah, and we're kind of in our own, and it's also in our own backyard here.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the news from us, and why wouldn't you? over Canada Day weekend in Halifax, a group of Mi'kmaq First Nations people were demonstrating in front of the statue of Old Cornwallis, who founded Halifax in the 1700s. I want to say 1749. Cornwallis, of course, famously offered 10 guineas for anyone who, you know, would capture or kill a native person. This was a demonstration, in the interest of truth and reconciliation and improved Aboriginal relations. Obviously, nothing that I don't think people would appreciate and acknowledge that a First Nations group would do on a commemoration like Canada Day, but about a group of young men called the Proud Boys took great offense, and this probably would have just been written off as a group of alt-right muckrakers, except that several of them were members, or are members, perhaps not for too much longer, of the Canadian Navy.
Yeah, it sounds like they're in, if I understand it right, they're in training. I don't think if they're full naval officers yet.
No.
Or not officers, sorry, members of the Navy. And it sounds like they're suspended for the time being until further notice, pending a review of what happened. And I think, well, if they check out the video and that, the review will probably, you know, there was no violence. They didn't really. They were confrontational for sure, and I think that was the intention. There's several things I don't really understand about the Proud Boys. I'd never really heard of them, and then when I found out Gavin McGinnis was behind them, he seems to be, because he was on the CBC yesterday talking about, as he seemed to be a member. He had the. And one thing is the co-opting of the Fred Perry shirt. I don't know if this means anything to anybody if you follow Ska, Two-Tone, a very anti-racist movement. Somehow the Fred Perry shirt has been co-opted as a bit of a uniform for these guys. I'm sure they would deny it. I'm sure they'd say, oh, no, no, we just have these matching shirts and matching whatever. And the other thing is, too, which I don't know if it's really a co-optation, the red ensign, like of all the flags to use. And I happen to see one on a truck on Canada Day, and I'm like, I think that's the red ensign, because it's, for people that don't know the red ensign, you've seen it. It looks like the Ontario flag, but it has a different crest, and the Ontario flag is based on the red ensign. It was the unofficial flag of Canada for years. You'll see it in references to World War One. There's one flying at Vimy Ridge. There were several variations of it. It was never official because we were actually under the Union Jack, officially. I think it was until the 45, the red ensign was in for a brief slice of time until 1965 when we got the Maple Leaf flag. Mm-hmm. I think these particular groups don't like the Maple Leaf flag specifically because it's liberal, government brought it in, and liberal colors. That's just my guess. I've never heard anybody outright say that. But
yeah,
McGinnis, when he was talking about this, was saying, oh, they had the Canadian flag. Well, not really. They had a Canadian flag or a variation on the Canadian flag. And of course, the implication is that, you know, this flag has taken on a different meaning than what it had. It makes sense because there's a link to the armed forces. It was the standard in World War One for sure. So there is a military link to it. But is it an official Canadian flag? Not really. In retrospect, right. And historically, sorry, I'm not laughing about that. I was just given a message, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes. our operator's a fantastic guy, I tell you what. God, where was I going? Adam, go ahead, man. I lost my train of thought there. Something about the Red Ensign.
The Red Ensign. I think that's kind of the least of the co-opting going on. The Proud Boys, and this has been sort of reprinted in a number of places about what this organization is about. They believe it. This is taken from their Facebook page, which I believe has been taken down now. Which, as Canadian Synagogue on Twitter pointed out, you know, if you take your Facebook page down, how proud can you be? But this is they said they believe in minimum government, maximum freedom. They're anti politically correctness. They're anti-racial guilt. They are pro-gun rights. They are anti-drug war. They are for closed borders. They are anti-masturbation for some reason. They venerate entrepreneurs. They venerate housewives. And they are about reinstating a spirit of Western chauvinism during an age of globalism and multiculturalism. And I got to ask, if you're in for venerating housewives and for Western chauvinism, you really want to take masturbation off the table?
Why is that even a thing?
I have.
Honest to God, why is that even in the list? I don't know where that comes from. Like, they're trying to be, because that sounds like something that comes out of you hear about in cults. Like, usually when it gets. There's some sort of sexual angle to it that it's what, you know, your political views are one thing, but then it's like you go into this, you know, obviously using the housewife reference to be provocative, among other things. But
and then this is, I did see their Facebook page briefly, and this is what I found interesting is they had a picture in the banner of Tom Wilkinson from The Patriot playing Lieutenant General Edward Cornwallis, who is, of course, a completely different Cornwallis as compared to the one that founded Halifax. Or maybe Lieutenant General Cornwallis, who is a very different Cornwallis from Edward Cornwallis, who founded Halifax. So, you know, I don't know if that was purposeful, or it's like they did a Google search for Cornwallis and thought, oh, here's a Cornwallis. But that kind of
Cornwallis
struck me
Cornwall,
too.
It's
like he's a white guy in a red uniform, so close enough.
Must be him,
yeah.
That's the problem when you're just sort of relying on Google searches and that kind of stuff for all of your information in your life. I think that's when we get, I was going to say situation like this. So this is the kind of thing that is driven by almost exclusively by the internet, because you can you watched the video, didn't you, Adam? Or you saw there's the mm-hmm. 2 minute clip making the rounds is of these guys sort of coming off in the distance with their flag, like on a march. McGinnis had said that they were in a bar. Now, to see them in this video, they don't seem like guys that have been in a bar.
Yeah, they all went to the bar wearing the same khakis and the same shirts.
And carrying a red ensign. Now, mind you, it's Canada Day, so people get their flags out. The Canada 150 flags or whatever. But he also, some of the things that he mentioned on the CBC, and of course, CBC were taking a bit of grief for having him on. Now, they did have, they'd had balance. They had McGinnis on, then they had a professor on of who studies political.
If
whatever.
I may interrupt for a second, Hannah Thibodeau actually just read something on the episode of Power and Politics running right this second. Started off the show.
An apology?
It's sort of. It's an acknowledgement where she says, "We made mistakes in our interview yesterday with the co-founder of the group, Gavin McGinnis. We wanted to learn more about that group after some of its members interrupted, blah, blah, blah. But ahead of that conversation, we failed to inform you of some anti-Jewish sentiment Mr. McGinnis has expressed in the past." That's a very famous Rebel Media video he did.
10 Things I Hate About Jews, he said.
Yeah, that clever little one. We could have also challenged him more on his controversial views, and although we heard from an academic immediately following the interview to get an opposing perspective on the group, we also could have followed up that interview with an indigenous voice. So, CBC is acknowledging that. You know, I'm in favor of exposing these people to the light of day too. I think that keeping them, to the side in the corner in the dark, it just allows the hatred to fester and to feed on itself. But yeah, you really have to be careful to contextualize it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It needs context. Now, but like I said, I saw a chunk of it, and it did seem balanced to a degree, and I can understand why they put out the disclaimer now. But I mean, I think people know who Gavin McGinnis is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. if they didn't, they know now, because we're talking about him. He's on the CBC, and everybody's talking. So, and I think that's the point of actions like these. I did find out some interesting. Well, what was something else that he said which he didn't mention was that it's a requirement to be in the organization. You need to be a cis male. Which is sort of taking the terminology of groups that deal with gender issues, I guess, and saying, no, you have to be cis male. And he compared the Proud Boys to the Rotary. And he made it sound like the Rotary and the Knights of Columbus don't exist anymore. Obviously, they still do. But I think there's a bit of a difference between this group and the... Because they're generally service groups, and they do service things rather than... go to a protest and be a counter-protest, which again, you're well within your rights in Canada to do that, but what's the point? Where are you going with this?
The Rotary Club are the people who put on the Canada Day festivities in Riverside Park.
To which all are welcome.
Yeah.
And including dissenters. I'm sure if somebody wanted to protest the Canada Day celebration in the park, if they were anti-firework or whatever, or choose your battle, they could do that and it shouldn't be a problem. And part of their argument, which is sort of correct, in that they're saying they're well within the rights to do what they did, but it depends on how you do it, right? There's a way to do this, and I'm not sure if they handled it well. Obviously not, because their employer or future employer, since they were in training, is not pleased. I think the chief of defense staff and the defense minister denounced it. Because, you're in the Canadian military, you're for all Canadians, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Indigenous or your cis male buddies or whatever, it's like you're supposed to defend everyone.
And that's the big issue, right? Because as Harjit Sanjan pointed out, the current Minister of Defense, he said, "I finally found out what race I was when I joined the military." Which is
interesting.
That wasn't a direct quote coming out of this, but it's something he said before, and that's a huge thing considering Minister Sanjan's success in the military, and now the fact that he's the Minister of Defense. So it does shine a light on a much broader problem. And somebody in a publication called The Coast, which is out of Halifax, wrote an editorial basically to the effect that, this is a systemic problem in the Canadian Armed Forces that has to be dealt with. So in so much as we sort of like to pop the Proud Boys balloon here, there is an undercurrent here of something much more systemic and probably much more dangerous in the long term. That has to be acknowledged.
Sure, and I'm not sure if we have any Proud Boys in town. We might, but I guess there was only 5 in Halifax. But if there's any in town, get in touch. We'd love to talk to you. I also need to mention before we go to part two, we have a winner for the second pair of tickets. Candace LePage. So I knew this was going to get a laugh out of this guy. So,
also known as a co-host for end credits.
I don't have any living relative, well, immediate relatives, but I would give them a call. In. No, Candace, congratulations. We'll see you at Hillside. Well, no, I'm going to be there on Sunday. I'm going to be there on Sunday at the CFRU booth, so please stop by 12 to 2. Come see me in the tent.
I don't think I'll be there, but...
You're not coming? But they just gave away the tickets. No, I don't know. Anyway.
Well...
We better get on
to I have scruples.
Two.
Anyway. I don't win tickets on my own show. Anyway,
call the next show. There might be
call the next show. Maybe Stacey
got
have
some
them.
Tickets. Yeah,
we have to take a break here because we do want to eagerly get our guest in, and we're going to play some music and be right back. You're listening to Open Source Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was Sarah Harmer from her album Oh Little Fire 2010. There you go, I didn't know that. Sarah Harmer is one of the artists that we'll be playing Hillside, to which we just gave away a whole whack of tickets. So
I'm not sure if 4 is a whack.
It's a whack.
All right.
If you have a cachet of tickets? I don't know. Anyway,
that's a cachet of tickets.
That song was called City.
This there is a go. Political show, not an English speaking show thing.
I think we speak English on the show.
Complimented tickets. We'll give it away.
I think we just proved that. So that other voice you're hearing is Mike Schreiner. He is the Green Party of Ontario leader. Soon may be the Guelph nominee for the Green Party to run in next year's provincial election. Fingers crossed. I think that's coming up at the end of the month.
July 30th, the Guelph Greens will hold their nomination, Riverside Park.
Is anyone running against you?
None of the above.
Oh.
None of the above runs in every single Green Party nomination contest.
Okay. So it's possible.
It is possible.
That it's like, yeah, but is it likely?
Well, we'll see. We'll see what none of the above can do.
Just to start off, you know, with a bit of fun, we crossed paths the other night at Committee of the Whole, and you came out to speak on VuNERFs.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes VuNERFs, first of all, what are VuNERFs? And what made that a priority for the Green Party of Ontario leader to come to City Council to speak to?
Well, first of all, my neighbor asked me to come out and speak.
Oh, well, there you go.
So,
oh,
you know, it's hard to say no to your neighbor when you're talking about it. It's something that you actually agree with your neighbor on. So I figured, what the heck, come out to council and speak on it. But VuNERFs are living streets, and essentially they're very popular in Europe. I lived in the Netherlands for a while and was just blown away by how connected communities are there, in particular connecting commercial, community, civic life. Mm-hmm. And I think that benefits small businesses. It benefits neighborhoods, it benefits people, it benefits kids, and essentially they're streets that are safe and accessible for all users, for cars, for pedestrians, cyclists, people with wheeled mobility devices, and so, you know what, we were like, you know what, Guelph has a VuNERF on Carden Street, so if you think Carden Street is, we already have one in a commercial area. They're not very common in residential areas in North America. Guelph's led the charge on so many issues. Mm-hmm. Why not on living streets and residential areas? And we thought, you know what? If there's one street that's willing to be a guinea pig for this in all of Guelph, New Street makes a lot of sense.
Right. Because it is a short street between
very short
two
street.
Other major streets. So, yeah, it would be interesting. Also, it would be interesting if Ontario found itself in a similar situation. We were talking about BC at the top of the show. And I imagine... this is perhaps your real fantasy scenario is a green government, but if there's like a more realistic fantasy scenario, it'd be like holding the balance of power coming out of Ontario. And I don't think I've heard you speak on in terms of how you think this might affect Ontario, because as we were talking about, we're in very similar situations here politically as BC was coming out of their election.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm pretty excited. People on this show will be the first to know. I'll announce it here publicly. Adam Olson, one of the MLAs elected in BC, will be speaking at the Green Party Guelph Greens nomination on July 30th.
Breaking news.
So breaking news right here. So if you want to come out and actually meet and listen to what one of those three Green MLAs has to say, come out to Riverside Park, 2 to 5 p.m., Sunday, July 30th. I think it's a huge opportunity. And you know what? It's not even so much about whether this is good for the Greens. I think this is good for Canadian democracy, because I think what people really need to see is politicians working together. Can you create a new way of doing politics where you see people doing more cooperation, collaboration that actually puts what the people of Canada, in this case BC, in my case I'll be saying Ontario, first and foremost? And I think that's what the Greens and the NDP are trying to accomplish, and I think it's very exciting for Canadian democracy.
Have you had a chance to talk to Andrea Horvath maybe about, you know, even just like kind of conversationally, to say like, could you imagine?
We haven't had the conversation since the BC election, though. I've made it very clear. Steve Paikin asked me about this on the agenda a couple weeks ago, and I made it very clear. I could work with any one of the three parties with seats at Queen's Park right now. I could find ways to work together with any of them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there's certain parties the Greens are probably more closely aligned with than others, but I could see ways to work with any of them. And I think that's what Ontarians want. Mm-hmm. They want to see a government that puts people first and puts issues that people care deeply about first. And I think people are tired of the political games. They're tired of the spin. They're tired of politicians saying one thing and doing another thing. I think Christy Clark in BC just demonstrated that in spades over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I think people just want politics that's going to work for people.
Mm-hmm. You did mention you could see yourself working with any of the parties. That does make me think of Patrick Brown, the PC leader. He's actually tried to make a point that his party is not going to be an anti sort of climate change, anti-environment party. And I wonder if that, you know, the Greens, known as an environmental party, what kind of effect that has on how you might operate and the party might operate in the election next year, because that has been kind of a wedge. You know, that has been a wedge for all the parties that aren't conservative to say, well, here's this one party that isn't acknowledging a thing that's going to have a drastic, actually maybe is having a drastic impact on our environment. Toronto Island's still closed after flooding weeks ago.
Yeah, Guelph experience. How many droughts have we had over the last 5 years or so? I mean,
absolutely.
It seems like every other year almost. And, you know, it's like too much water one year, not enough water the next year. We are already paying the cost of climate change, and those costs are only going to get higher. And so, you know, it's definitely an issue we need to address. And I'm happy in Ontario we seem to be moving past the debate of whether climate change is affecting us, and actually now starting to have a debate of what's the best way to address climate change. What's the best way to do it that, you know, benefits people's health, benefits our communities, benefits the economy, benefits the environment, obviously. And that's a debate I'm very excited about. One of the things I was really proud of was last year the Greens led the charge in getting big money out of politics. That was the issue I worked the hardest on last year. And I think it's unprecedented, actually, for a party without a seat in the legislature to actually take the lead in, like, writing the legislation and shepherding the legislation through Queen's Park. And I had an opportunity to meet with Patrick Brown, Andrew Horvath, and Premier Wynne on that issue, and tried to work a way to find an all-party compromise around it. And unfortunately, the others weren't as willing to be as cooperatively as maybe the Greens were. But the one thing that did come out of that was I had a couple good meetings with Patrick Brown. And, you know, in addition to talking about the need to get big money out of politics, which, boy, I don't know if you saw their fundraising numbers lately and the number of corporate donations. Unbelievable. But that's an aside. The important point was, is, you know, we actually did have an opportunity to talk about just how critically important it is to put a price on carbon pollution and how that's good for both the environment and the economy. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping he's listening. Unfortunately, I don't know if his party's listening. So I know there's a lot of dissent within the party. I know you had Michael Chong on a couple weeks ago, I believe.
We did.
Talking about this issue. And, you know,
thanks for listening, by the way.
Absolutely. I'm a regular. Mostly
here's some
podcast.
Hillside tickets.
Can I get those Hillside tickets? I did a phone in, but I love the Hillside
tickets. There you go.
But you know what? I think he saw, you know, unfortunately, Michael Chong's campaign.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact that I admire him, actually, to get up on stage every debate and be booed, essentially,
absolutely,
by your own party members. And so we'll see where the conservatives' platform lands next year, or, well, about 10 months from now.
Yeah.
But you know, I hope Patrick sticks to it, because I think it would be great to have four parties in Ontario that support some form of carbon pricing.
Do you call him Brownie? The name, it just automatically makes me think Brownie, or, you know, but it's, anyway.
That's
to
come.
Let's hope next spring is green. How about we put it that way?
Oh, well done.
And not brown.
Well done indeed. I did note that you recently had a piece on HuffPo about fracking and wanted to make sure we don't have... Is that really on the books? Because that seems like something that's under the radar.
It's under the radar, but unbelievable the response we've received from people saying, you know what, absolutely we need to ban fracking in Ontario. And the fact that the Liberals seem to be playing footsie with the fracking industry, I mean, they've over the years made geological mapping available to the industry. The most recent omnibus budget bill has language in it that opens the door to fracking. And so what I'm saying right now is, you know what, slam that door shut.
Yeah.
Like, we do not want to see fracking operations start up in Ontario and then come back later and say, oh, hey, we don't want this in Ontario. Let's definitively say no right now. And, you know, just as an example of, you know, the Green Party, my desire to work with other parties, Peter Tabbins actually put forward a private members bill to ban fracking in Ontario a year and a half ago or so. And, you know, I came out right away in support of it and actually mobilized Green Party supporters, members across the province to support another party's private members bill, because that's the right stance for Ontario to take. Unfortunately, the bill hasn't passed. And so what we're saying right now is, let's close the door to fracking. Our water is way too precious and important to threaten it. You know, why would you allow fracking in a province that has three of the largest nuclear plants in North America? You know, when fracking leads to earthquake and other seismic activities, like, it has no place in Ontario.
Where would they be doing the fracking? Is it
a lot of it would be mapped in southwestern Ontario?
So in our neighborhood,
close to Bruce and Bruce Nuclear,
right?
And not in the immediate vicinity of Guelph, but certainly in the region of southwestern Ontario. If you look at the mapping that's been made publicly available.
But yeah, but if the earth starts shaking, we would feel it.
I would think so.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at. It's not like up by James Bay or anything.
Oh yeah, no.
It'd be like Petrolia, right? Somewhere down
there. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, Sarnia, Lambton, and those areas obviously is where you would see more of that activity. But certainly the possibility of us feeling it, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it just seems like one of these things, and you're right about the water issues, because that's deeply personal to people in this area in particular. You were at Waterstock recently.
Absolutely.
The two definitely tie into each other, and it just seemed weird to me that this thing seems to be going on, and it takes the Green Party leader to post a... I mean, not that you shouldn't, but that that's what it sort of takes to put a light on this, is... This seems like a major shift, especially for a government trying to sow its, you know, lefty oats before the election next year.
Well, I think you have a government that has not governed in a way that I would call as progressive as the image they like to present, the Wynn Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clear we're moving into an election season, because they've certainly started to position themselves more progressive way.
Yeah.
You know, I think these kinds of issues, oftentimes, you know, the problem with sort of conventional mainstream parties is they oftentimes follow instead of lead.
Right.
And they're not willing to go out and take a strong position on issues that people care about unless they're forced to do it. And, you know, and this is an instance where, you know, I feel like part of my job is to not only listen to people and act on the issues they want me to take action on, but to also be looking out for issues that are maybe under the radar that I know people care deeply about. I know people care deeply about the protecting our water, as an example.
Yeah.
And so for me, I feel like part of my job is to be looking out for challenges, problems like this, publicly letting people know about it so then people can take action. And that's exactly what citizens are doing across, like what, here in Guelph for sure, but all across the province are taking action, pushing this government to protect our water.
Mm-hmm. What's happening on that front locally? Because we did have that big push in the fall for bottled water, and then that did have an effect on the provincial political landscape. In terms of what's going on right now?
Well, I think the big issues right now are, we've had some successes on the bottled water issue. There's a moratorium on new permits, and they've raised the water-taking fee. So it's not completely like we're giving away a precious resource, but the government's given no numbers, whether it's just like cost recovery or not. Like that's what we've been asking for, is cost recovery, just to pay for the programs to sustainably manage our water.
Yeah.
But the issue the Liberals have failed to address, which I think is critically important, and I know everybody at Waterstock certainly felt this way, is that water should be a human right. And the number one priority for water taking permits in this province should be public drinking water for communities. And that would be managing water as a public resource in the public trust, putting the people of this province first. And that's what the government is failing to do. They're not only failing to do that with things like bottled water, but even as big or even bigger of an issue in Guelph or in Wellington County is the number of quarries that are here and the amount of water they're pumping and how much of that water is being used to wash rock and et cetera, et cetera. And, a big issue for me, obviously I've been very vocal about the Dolheim Quarry. You know, we haven't even settled. The city and the province and the Dolheim Quarry are still in negotiations around their last water taking permit, which is actually going to expire at the end of this year. And so they're going to be reapplying for the permit. And we haven't even settled the problems that the city identified. And I think the reasonable, very reasonable ask the city's had on the Dolheim Quarry. So I think you're going to see that issue really emerge again this fall.
Interesting. Because I don't think, now that we're talking about like petition, like applications and things, I still don't think that they've posted the public feedback for the Nestle renewal.
Yeah, no.
And that expired almost a year ago. It's a year ago at the end of this month.
Exactly, yeah. And so what happens is in the absence of any new rules, the permit holder can continue operating as if how they've always operated. And, it's highly problematic, especially in the case of like Dolheim Quarry, where 25% of Guelph's drinking water is threatened, both the quality and quantity of it. And to think that, the government's just sort of dragging their feet on this, I think it's unacceptable.
No, I would agree. It's, I recognize that, and I think when we talked about this last, we were talking about how the government is trying to not take a stand by not taking a stand.
But they're taking a stand by not taking a stand.
You're right, yeah. They're taking a stand by not taking a stand, but they're trying to sort of thread a political needle because they know it's going to be unpopular as soon as it gets posted. They know they're going to get the public feedback. They know that's going to draw the press. And they don't, that's the news, that's a news story they don't want.
They don't want that, especially in an election year. And they've already got some, pretty tough news stories coming up.
Absolutely.
The court cases around the email scandals and some of these other issues. So they're still dealing with the fallout from the Sudbury by-election, scandal after scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they're just trying to like reduce the number of fires they have to put out. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So having said that, before we start campaigning next May, what are you hoping to get done? What are you hoping to see get done?
Yeah, so my focus really, Adam, is what are the issues people care about and they want us to take action on? And so I've just completed a listening tour all across the province, Windsor to North Bay, Ottawa, everywhere in between, Sudbury. Obviously in Guelph, I'm doing my own little Guelph listening tour as well. And so my focus really is taking action on issues that people care about, that they tell me they care about, because I feel like I've proven that I can get things done at Queen's Park. The Greens can get things done at Queen's Park, even without a seat. And like, say, imagine what we could accomplish if we had a seat or two or three seats like in BC. But in the meantime, I don't want to wait that long to do things that people want us to do. And so one of them is, people, electricity rates are a huge issue for people. Mm-hmm. Nobody at Queen's Park is saying no to the 180% price increase that the nuclear industry has put a request in for to help finance the rebuilding of nuclear plants. If you think this 70% increase has been tough on people, and it has been, I mean, people all over Guelph tell me it's a huge issue all across Ontario. People are telling me the 70% increase over the last decade has hit them hard. Imagine what 180% increase is going to do to people.
Yeah.
Nobody at Queen's Park is saying no to that. So the Greens are the only party saying, you know what, no. No to the 180% price increase for the nuclear industry. We're going to continue to fight on water. Our water is so precious. And, you know, many issues, Dole Lime, you know, bottled water, fracking, et cetera, et cetera. Like, we need standards in this province that prioritize public drinking water for people, period. And so we're going to keep fighting on that. Another big one that people tell me about is jobs. Like, you know, there's a lot of people, and I know Guelph's unemployment is relatively low, but I still talk to a number of people looking for jobs or even looking for better jobs. Like, precarious employment is a huge issue. And, you know, we're the party that's saying, you know what? Let's help small businesses create jobs by lowering their payroll taxes so they can afford to create more jobs. They can afford to create more better paying jobs.
Right.
We're the only party that's really pushing Ontario capturing the $6 trillion economic opportunity in the clean tech space. Even if Ontario captured 1% of that, that would be a bigger contribution to our GDP than the auto sector, believe it or not, which is a huge contributor. And I think Guelph is as well positioned as any place in Ontario or any place in North America, for that matter, to be a leader in clean tech innovation. Mm-hmm. And so I want those economic opportunities to benefit people here in Guelph and across the province.
I just wanted to address this one thing before we sign off. The Greens, of course, as we talked about, typically thought of as an environmental party, but in terms of going into the election, some of the things you've talked about, how big a role do you think environment's going to play in 2018?
You know, it's hard to, I think more and more people are recognizing the connection between the fact that a healthy environment is needed to have a prosperous economy and to then take care of the people we need to take care of in our community. You know, one of the issues the Green Party has been championing for years is the basic income guarantee. We think it is the most efficient and effective way to eliminate poverty. We're happy that the province is moving forward with a pilot project on it, but what they're proposing isn't good enough. And so, you know, I think you'll see us talking a lot about jobs. You'll see us talking a lot about taking care of people, and you'll see us talking a lot about obviously taking care of the places we love, the place we call home, Ontario, Guelph, this planet.
Mike Schreiner, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, you can always follow me on Twitter at Mike Schreiner, Facebook Mike Schreiner. Obviously, you can follow the Guelph Greens at Guelph Greens, guelphgreens.ca, and then the provincial party, gpo.ca, or at Ontario Greens.
All right, and that meeting again at Riverside, that's the 30th?
July 30th, 2 to 5 p.m. There's going to be great food, great music, probably a couple speeches from a few people here and there, and it should be a lot of fun for the whole family.
I'm sure the speeches will be delicious. thank you so much for coming in today, and we look forward to having you back. And
absolutely, anytime.
Yeah, we will. I'm sure we'll run into each other when NERFs are on the agenda at City Council. Anyway, we do have to call it a day here on Open Sources. You can stay in touch with us, and we're going to have more guest announcements soon. We're trying to book all sorts of people to come in over the summertime. OpenSourcesGuelph.com, OpenSourcesNewsWire on the Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on the Twitter. And, of course, you can get this episode and other previous episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher. I will be back here next Thursday. That's the temporary home for end credits. That's at 10 a.m. for movie news and reviews. And then I will also be at the Two Rivers Market tomorrow. I'll be experimenting with dealing with people IRL in real life. I'm doing a Ask a Journalist booth at the Two Rivers Market, and that's between 4 and 7 at the old Teitler School. And you can come chat with me there if you like and complain about how my friends are winning Hillside tickets. I look forward to hearing your complaints. Anyway, Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter and Doug Wolf, politico.blogspot.ca.
I'm just picturing complaints, 5 cents. Anyway, Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at the Spanner Book. Haven't lately, but I'm hoping to. And congratulations once again to Scott and Candace, our Hillside ticket winners.
And if you want to be my friend, you can also win stuff at CFRU. Anyway.
We don't know them. Never heard of them.
DJ Sounds Good to Me here. It's here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources. And until then, we will see you later.